we stopped our study in First Chronicles last week, and in case you're expecting a really exciting, you know, time in Chronicles, the first several chapters are very basically, you read through First Chronicles, the first 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 chapters, and you're pretty much a name dropper. And I mentioned this last week, that it's really important that these were recorded, because one of the things that have been lost in modern Jewish days is that full lineage. And you recall that the Israelites came into the Promised Land, and there were some of them that didn't make it all the way in. The tribe of Manasseh, the tribe of Reuben, and the tribe of Gad did not go into the Promised Land. They stayed on the eastern side of the Jordan River. And they said to Moses, you know, why don't you just let us stay over here? Because we, of all the tribes, we are the cattlemen, we are the ranchers, we have the sheep, we have all of these animals, and this land is perfect for us. And if we could just stay here and occupy this land, then that would be wonderful. And at that point, Moses said, well, you know, it's hardly fair that all of your relatives have to go into the Promised Land. They have to fight the battles, and you just pretty much get to live in this land that's already taken. And their response was, well, no, we're willing to go and to fight alongside of our brothers until they get their inheritance. But the land over there is rather hilly. It's rather rocky. Some areas are very deserty. And this is just a lush area that is just perfect for grazing animals. And so Moses said, okay, you guys can stay here as long as the men that are able to fight will cross the Jordan River with us and fight. And you recall that whole story. They stayed there. They stayed there for years and years as they fought the battle so that the Israelites, the rest of the tribes, could get their land and could conquer it. And as they were coming back, they set up a tall pillar just on the western side of the Jordan River. And when it was reported to Joshua that people, you know, tribes of Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh have set up this pillar, this image, this thing to be worshipped. And so Joshua gathered the men together, said, let's go. We're gonna take those guys out right now because they've already fallen into idolatry. And so they got there, and talk about one of the most amazing cases of misunderstanding. Joshua came and spoke to the tribes, and they said, you know, the only reason that we erected this pillar is so that your descendants will never be able to say to our descendants, you don't have a part in God's land. You don't have a part in this holy land. We made this monument so that your children and our children will know that we fought with you, and we are as much a part of this land as you are. And so the Transjordan tribes is what those three tribes were called. The Transjordan tribes were carried away into captivity first and foremost. They fell into idolatry and they got scattered. And then the northern 10 tribes, all the tribes except for the tribes of Judah and Benjamin, were all carried away by the Assyrian Empire. And the Assyrian Empire came in and pretty much scattered them. And a lot of their genealogy and ancestry was lost. The tribe, we mentioned this last week, the tribe of Judah and the tribe of Benjamin were carried away to Babylon. And in Babylon, remember what they did? They established schools. They established places of getting together and worshiping. They didn't intermarry with all the people of that foreign land, but they stayed true to the Lord. And that was the advent of synagogues, of churches, and they would meet together so that they could hear the word and they could be united and they could find strength with each other, and so their kids could find other Jewish kids to marry. And so, you know, all of that was taking place with the whole concept of the synagogue. So when the Jews came back, these books were written by Ezra and the priests, as they mainly, the main purpose of these books is not just to give historical records, which we're going to get into in a few chapters, but more importantly, to trace the genealogy so that people can say, I know where my roots are, I know who I belong to. And we see that in the New Testament too, right? We see that Luke doing it and Matthew doing it, giving the lineage of Jesus so that we can go all the way back to Abraham, we can go all the way back to David, because the Messiah was going to be a descendant of David. We can go all the way back to Abraham. We can go all the way back to Adam and just trace that lineage all the way and say he is the rightful heir. He is the one who is able to reign in that position. And today, if Jesus hadn't been the Messiah and a Messiah came on the scene right now, he would be unable to approve his lineage like they were able to prove in this day. So that's why the first one we're looking at right now is the tribe of Judah, because it's out of the lion of the tribe of Judah comes the ruler, comes the scepter that will not depart from Judah. And so all of this was prophesied, and that's why we're looking at the tribe of Judah right now. And in the midst of looking at the tribe of Judah, we concluded with verses 9 and 10 last week, which just out of nowhere we get this guy, and his name is Jabez, and it says in verse 9 of 1 Chronicles 4, "Now Jabez was more honorable than his brothers, and his mother called his name Jabez, saying, 'Because I bore him in pain,'" which is just what Jabez means, it means pain. "And Jabez called on the God of Israel, saying, 'Oh, that you would bless me indeed and enlarge my territory, that your hand would be with me and that you would keep me from evil, that I may not cause pain.'" And some of the best words you'll ever read in the Bible are these words: "So God granted him what he requested." God enlarged his territory. God blessed him. God's hand was with him. And God not only kept him from evil, but he blessed people instead of causing pain to people. So then we go on in verse 11, and we read here that Caleb was the brother of Shuhan, and I know you're all familiar with those guys, Mehir, who was the father of Eshton, and Eshton begot Bathrapha, Pasea, and Tinanah, the father of Ir-Nahash. These were men of Rehab, rehabilitation. The sons of Kenaz were Othniel, and Othniel was the first judge. That's a name that rings a bell, right? You read the book of Judges. Othniel was the first judge. And Seraiah, the sons of Othniel were Hahath and Maonathiah, who begot Ophrah, not to be confused with Oprah. Seraiah begot Joab, the father of Jehershim. They were craftsmen. And what we're learning is that, you know, there were individuals that had these certain abilities, and it was really handed down from generation to generation. In a little while, we're going to get to the sons of Asaph, who were the singers in the tabernacle that David had erected in Jerusalem, later became the worship leaders in the temple that Solomon built, and it was kind of a heredity thing. And you may look at some of your family and say, you know, wow, it's just amazing how our family has had certain talents, like in arts. You know, they're just generation of artists, you know, generations of writers. And as we see here, that these guys were craftsmen. They just had this real ability to make things. The sons of Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, were Iru, Elah, and Nahum. The son of Elah was Kenaz. The sons of Jehaliel were Zipha, Tyre, Asarel. The sons of Ezra were Jether, Mered, Ephron, Jalon, and Mered's wife bore Miriam, Shammai, Ishban, the father of Ishtimoah. His wife, Jehidijah, bore Jared, the father of Gedor, Heber, the father of Succoth, and Jekthiel, the father of Zenoah. And these were the sons of Bithiah, the daughter of Pharaoh, whom Mered took. That's a little interesting side note, because we look back at Israel living in Egypt and we think, oh, you know, it was all terrible, terrible, terrible. No, you have to remember that for the first generation after Joseph, things were really good. Okay? It wasn't until after Joseph died, another Pharaoh came up who, and the Bible says, did not know Joseph, but literally it says, paid no respect to Joseph. Okay? Because the original Pharaoh that Joseph stood before knew that he owed the existence of that nation to Joseph. And so when Joseph brought his relatives down and they landed in the land of Goshen, and understand, the land of Goshen was probably the greatest place to live in all of Egypt. You know how the Nile River flows north and it flows into the Mediterranean Sea, and as it gets toward the Mediterranean Sea, it breaks into fingers, and all, you have all of these fingers of creeks and rivers that all flow into the Mediterranean Sea, and between those fingers are some of the most fertile soil anywhere. And guess where Joseph put his relatives? Voila! Okay? Goshen was the land of Goshen. It was a really good, good place for them to live. And which, of course, as time went on, built up some resentment among the Egyptians, saying, you know, who do you think you are that you get the prime land here? And of course, they didn't move them out of that land. They just began to afflict them in that land. But here we find that this particular guy, Merod, married Pharaoh's daughter. And of course, that was when things were good. The sons of Hodiah's wife, the sister of Nahum, the fathers of Kaliah, the Garmite, and of Eshtemoah, and the Machathelite, and the sons of Shimon, who were Amnon, Rinnan, Ben-Hanan, and Tilon, and the sons of Ishai were Zohath and Ben-Zohath. Kind of ran out of names here. We're going to call him our first son Zohath and our second son Ben-Zohath. Yeah, okay. The sons of Shelah, the son of Judah. And you remember Shelah? Remember Shelah was the third child, the third son of Joshua. Of Judah. And Judah's two sons had married Timnah, and the first son died, and because he was wicked and evil. And then the second son married her, and you know, he knew that the firstborn son would be named after his brother, so he really didn't want anything to do with this woman. And so he ended up dying. And so Judah said, well, you know, just take it easy and hang on. And when my son Shelah becomes of age, I will give him to you as your husband. And, you know, Judah, I think, in his heart of hearts was thinking, this woman has already killed two of my sons. You know, I'm not saying that my sons were perfect, but I'm thinking she pushed him over the edge. Maybe it was her cooking, maybe, you know, it was her coffee making, whatever it was. And so when Shelah became of age, he never gave Shelah to Timnah to marry. And you remember that whole story, right? That Timnah was dressed in mourning, and you know, when she saw that Shelah wasn't going to be given to her, she went dressed like a prostitute, and Judah was going down to shear sheep, and so she, you know, seduced him and ended up getting pregnant by him, had twins, and you know, so Judah, you know how judgmental we are at people. You know, and Judah is a classic example. And I've always found that people that are really, really, really judgmental, there's something wrong in their life. Okay, I just, without exception. I mean, people that show no grace to anybody else, they don't show grace to anybody else because there's something they're trying to hide, and they're making noise over here, so you'll look over there and you won't look at them. And so Judah, you know, heard that Timnah was pregnant, and he said, oh, she's played the harlot, and it's time for us to bring her out and let's burn her at the stake. I mean, it's basically, let's bring her out and let's burn her. And so she sent these two little things, a staff and a little signet that she had taken as collateral until this guy who slept with her would bring back a sheep for her, you know, to exchange. And so she sent these two things to him and said, the man who's these belong to is the father of my children. And it was like, he shut up really, really fast. Anyway, so Shelah, the son of Judah, ended up getting married, not to Timnah, but to somebody else. And he was the father of Ur, the father of Lekah, Leada, and the father of Meresha. And the families of the house of linen workers of the house of Ashbia. And it's interesting, okay, so now all of a sudden we have this one group of people, these descendants of Shelah, that end up being linen workers. They just got the hang of weaving stuff, and just that became their trait. That became how they were known as a family. Also, Jochim, the men of Kosiba, and Joash, Sheraph, who ruled in Moab, and Jashuba, Lemum. Now the records are ancient. These were the potters, and those who dwelt at Netaim and Girdia were the ones that dwelt with the king for his work. So now we're told that also not only were there linen workers that were in this family line, but there were also some that worked with pottery, and worked with pottery so well that they ended up doing things for the king. And now we leave Judah and we move to the tribe of Simeon. The sons of Simeon were Nemuel, Jamim, Jarib, Zerah, and Shalum, his son, Mibsham, if I didn't correct that, you would have caught it, I know. His son, Mishma, his son, and the sons of Mishma were Hamuel, his son, Zucker, his son, Shimei, his son. Shimei had 16 sons and 6 daughters. Okay, there's the record, all right? For those of you who think you have a big family, 16 and 6, baby, right there. But his brothers did not have many children. Good thing! Golly, if his brothers would have had as many kids as he had, guess what? There would have been no room for the family reunion, okay? Nor did any of their families multiply as much as the children of Judah. And that's an interesting side note, too, because when you look at a map of how the land was laid out when the Israelites went in, Judah gets this massive area. And the reason that Judah got this massive area was because they were incredibly fruitful. Okay, they were more numerous than any of the other tribes. And it's interesting because what they were connected to the tribe of Benjamin, which was the smallest of all the tribes, and they were the fiercest. I mean, the men of Benjamin were by far the toughest of everyone. Okay, so good thing that Simeon's family didn't try to keep up with the Joneses or with the people of Judah. And they dwelt at Beersheba, Molda, Hazar, Shuai, Bilhah, Ezam, Tolad, Bethuel, Hormah, Ziklag, Beth Markab, Hazar, Shushim, Beth Birai, and She'arim. These were the cities until the reign of David. And their villages were Etam, Ain, Rimam, Takian, and Hashan, 5 cities, and the villages that were around these cities as far as Baal. These were their dwelling places, and they maintained their genealogy. Mishobab, Jemlek, Joshan, the son of Amaziah, Joel and Jehu, the son of Josabiah, the son of Seraiah, the son of Ashiel, Ilaniah, Jeokabiah, I'm glad we don't name our kids this today, Jeshohaiah, Asaiah, Adal, Jezmiel, Benaniah, Ziza, the son of Shippai, the son of Alon, the son of Jedidiah, the son of Shimri, the son of Shimeiah. These mentioned by names were leaders in their family, and their father's house increased greatly. So they went to the entrance of Gedor as far as the east side of the valley to seek pasture for their flocks. And they found rich, good pasture, and the land was broad, quiet, and peaceful. For some Hamites formerly lived there. These recorded by name came in the days of Hezekiah, king of Judah, and they attacked their tents and the Meunites who were found there, and utterly destroyed them as it is to this day. So they dwelt in their place because there was pasture for their flocks there. Now some of them, 500 men of the sons of Simeon, went to Mount Seir, having as their captains Peltaiah, Neriah, Rephaiah, I guess you had to be an Iah to get in this group, Uzziel, oh, we blew that one, the sons of Ishai. They defeated the rest of the Amalekites who had escaped. They have dwelt there to this day. So it's just mentioned here that when it came to, you know, taking land, you remember that even when the Israelites finally settled in the land, that they hadn't driven out the inhabitants completely. But there were battles that continually went on. In fact, you remember that there was a group of people that lived in the stronghold of Zion. These Gibeonites lived in the stronghold of Zion, and when David became king, they got wind that David really wanted that highest place. He really wanted Jerusalem. And so they sent messengers to David after he became king and said, you know what, we have such a strong fortress here that we could put lame people and blind people on the wall and hold you off. And it says that, and David hated the Gibeonites. I mean, when they said that, it just made his blood boil. And he said, whoever goes and figures out how to take these people, I'm giving them, you know, my daughter as a wife. And one of the guys came up with this bright idea to go up through the water supply, through the water tunnel, went in and took the city. Okay? And it was just like, and David, you know, from then on it was kind of a joke. Yeah, like the blind and the lame can hold David off, fat chance. Okay, and 1 Chronicles chapter 5, now the sons of Reuben, okay, so now we have Reuben, and that's kind of out of order because Reuben was the firstborn. He was the firstborn of Israel. He was indeed the firstborn, but because he defiled his father's bed, his birthright was given to the sons of Joseph. the son of Israel, so that the genealogy is not listed according to the birthright. Okay, now you remember that Joseph had two sons, right? He had Manasseh and Ephraim. And Israel, or Jacob, pretty much gave Reuben his walking papers when it came to an inheritance, because Reuben had done something that was just absolutely terrible to do. He had slept with his father's wife, okay? Now, Bilhah was her name. She was actually Rachel's servant. Remember when Rachel was given to Jacob to be his wife, that along with her came her maid, Bilhah. And when Rachel couldn't conceive and her sister Leah's popping babies out, she comes up with this bright idea, and she said, well, why don't you take my maid Bilhah as your wife? And understand, this was very common in that day. There was a term that was used to describe this kind of wife. She was actually a concubine. A concubine was a wife who was a slave. So you could actually marry a slave, but your marriage to her didn't bring her freedom, and her children didn't necessarily have to be heirs with a wife that was free. Okay, so it was basically a wife with no rights. And a lot of you women say, yeah, I know what that feels like. And I always be careful when I talk about concubines. And so Bilhah was actually Jacob's wife, and she probably was a very attractive woman. She gave birth to Dan and Naphtali. And Reuben, who was the oldest of all of Jacob's children, decided he really liked her. And so he slept with her. And Jacob didn't say a word. He didn't say anything to him until years later, as he's pronouncing the blessing. And he said, oh yes, son. And don't think that your actions went unnoticed by me. You are disinherited. And so when we read here that he was disinherited, and remember that Joseph had two children, Manasseh and Ephraim. And when Jacob was giving his blessing to Joseph's sons, he told Joseph, he said, you know, you were gone from me for all of these years. And in all of those years you were away from me, God blessed you with two sons. And you may call them your sons, but I'm taking them as mine. And as they have an inheritance with Judah and with Simeon, in the same way, your sons are going to have that kind of inheritance. And so he kind of bumped Reuben out and put Manasseh and Ephraim, one of them being, taking the place of Joseph, and the other one taking the place of Reuben, interestingly enough. Okay? So it mentions here that he defiled his father's bed, and his birthright was given to the sons of Joseph, not the son of Israel. So the genealogy is not listed according to the birthright. So that's why the priests, as they're writing this, is saying, this is why we haven't mentioned Reuben first, but we are mentioning him now. Because of what he did, there is still a blemish on his family. And yet Judah prevailed over his brothers, and from him came a ruler, although the birthright was Joseph. So although the birthright went to Joseph, it was Judah that was actually the one through whom the ruler came. And of course, this is after they've been spent the 70 years in exile. They were looking back and saying, but the real lineage, the real rulers, came from the tribe of Judah, and they were David and his descendants after him, which, of course, will include the Messiah at a later time. The sons of Reuben, the firstborn of Israel, were Hanok, Palul, Hezron, Carmi. The sons of Joel were Shemaiah, his son, Gog, his son, Shemaiah, his son, Micah, his son, Rehaiah, his son, Baal, his son, and Bera, his son, whom Tilgath-Pileser, king of Assyria, carried into captivity. He was the leader of the Reubenites. Okay, and it just mentions here that, now remember we talked about the Transjordan tribes and how the tribes that were across from the Promised Land, they were on the other side of the Jordan River, how they fell into idolatry and they were carried away into captivity. And the nation that fell next was the Northern Kingdom. You remember when Solomon died that his son Rehoboam was going to reign in his stead. And there was a gentleman that was really opposing when Solomon continued in his rebellion against God raised up an adversary, and one of the adversaries that he raised up was Jeroboam. And it talks about that fact that the Lord raised up enemies to Solomon because God had appeared to him two times, visibly appeared to him, and spoke to him two times succinctly. And in spite of that, he just kind of rebelled against God. You remember that he married all those foreign women? I mean, you talk about a guy that was out of his mind. He had, you know, like 700 wives and 300 concubines, 1,000 women he was married to. And a lot of them were foreign women, and he built houses for them and temples to their gods. And this greatly displeased the Lord. And because of this, God said, you know, I'm not going to continue your reign throughout generations. But for the sake of David, I'm not taking all of it away from you. And so that's why the kingdom was divided when you remember the story that the people came to Rehoboam, Solomon's son, and they said, we are exhausted. I mean, the entire time that your dad has reigned, I mean, for decades, we have been doing nothing but building and working, and we are just worn out. We really need a rest. We just, can you just lighten the burden some now? You know, I mean, we've built everything. Everything looks really good. And if we can just go into maintenance mode, it would be just absolutely wonderful, you know. And we can get back to our normal lives of normal living and normal working. And so Rehoboam went to Solomon's advisors, his father's advisors, and said, well, you know, these people are asking for this. What do you advise that I do? And they said to him, they said, Rehoboam, if you'll be a servant right now to these people, if you will just humble yourself and speak gently to them right now, they will be your servants forever. And then he went to his friends, all the guys that were his age, and he said, what do you think I should say to them? Get back out there and tell them that my little finger is thicker than my father's thigh, okay? And not only that, but my father whipped you with whips, and I'm going to whip you with scorpions. You go tell them that. You let them know who's boss. Okay? So which advice did he follow? Yep, the guys that were his own age. He went out there, and he spoke harsh to the people, and the people rose up and said, we want nothing to do with you. We have absolutely had it. We're through. And these 10 northern tribes followed Jeroboam, and that's how the nation of Israel and the nation of Judah came into being. And so from that point on, they were two divided nations. Now the northern nation, the northern kingdom, the first thing that Jeroboam did was he was concerned that the Israelites would go back down to Jerusalem to worship. And when they got back down to Jerusalem and they worshiped there, he was fearful that once again, their hearts would not only turn to the Lord, but their hearts would turn to David. And they would remember David, and they would remember Solomon, and they would remember these good times that they had and their ancestors had when they were one nation, and they would want to go back. So to prevent that from happening, he set up two golden calves. What is it about the stinking golden calves? It's two calves, okay? One way up in the northern area in Dan, one in the southern area just north of where Judah was, and set those there. And his proclamation was this. This way, you don't have to travel those great distances. You know how inconvenient it was for us in the north to have to go all the way down to Jerusalem three times a year to worship. I mean, it was, you know, it was taxing, and it just wore us out. So I set up these other alternate gods, and I'm going to set up some other priest kind of guys, and they're going to oversee all of this. And that way, we'll have a priesthood, and we'll still have feast days. We'll do the same kind of feast they did down south. Same days they did them. We'll do the week long. We can, you know, live in tents, and we'll do the same things they were doing down there. Okay? But this way, it's more convenient for you. Okay, that way, you don't have to travel a great distance. You don't have to worry about being inconvenienced. And Jeroboam laid the foundation for the northern kingdom to fall into idolatry as well. And that's what we see happening. As time goes on, the northern kingdom is taken away by the kingdom of Assyria and are scattered. We always hear that term today, don't we? The lost tribes of the house of Israel, right? We always hear that term because those 10 tribes were literally scattered. Okay, they were scattered throughout the world and intermarried and you know, everything else that came on. They just kind of lost their whole, you know, purpose and being, which, you know, God was very gracious to make sure that Judah didn't lose that as well. Anyway, that's kind of where we are, and we're going to stop there for this week. Father, we thank you again for your word. We thank you for the truth that your word contains and conveys to us every time we read it. And Lord, I just pray tonight that as we've heard accounts of individuals, and as we looked at different people and stopped and paused a couple of times, we've been reminded of some of the stories we've heard from the book of Genesis and from the book of Judges and from 1 and 2 Samuel. Lord, as we remember those things, we just thank you that you just lay this incredible foundation in our lives, and all the spiritual truth that we receive just builds on that foundation that you've laid. And I, again, just thank you for this portion of Scripture, and just ask, Lord, that you would just let the word stick with us. Let there be something that we heard tonight, something that just kind of resonated with us tonight, that we'll just be able to kind of meditate on and chew on through the rest of the week. In Jesus' name.